before Hanukkah, and it was, let's say, it was a different kind of shiur. It was an explanation of the uniqueness of the establishment of the Mishkan in the desert, the construction of the first Beit HaMikdash, the second Beit HaMikdash, what will happen at the time of the third Beit HaMikdash, and we also talked about Hanukkah. Now we're going to go back to text. We were up to chapter 6, and as I've told you, just hang in over there. You're soon going to get the hang of the historic context in which we are talking. There are three kings that are of major significance to us. There are going to be a lot of other kings there in the middle that will not be mentioned during the in Ezra and Nehemiah, but we're concerned with Koresh, Daryavesh, and Artaxasta. Permission is granted three times. Three separate edicts of three different kings. And each one of the edicts, in a sense, extends the permission or the license that's given to the Jewish people to return to Judea and to reestablish themselves. Koresh, who was the first one, is the one who really gives permission for the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. Daryavesh is going to, we'll see, he is going to extend the area of permission. Artaxasta is going to go one step further. There are periods in the middle between the granting of one permission and another that the work of rebuilding the Jewish state is halted, because there are all sorts of enemies living in the land. We're up to chapter 6. Watch, you'll see. In Bedayin, Daryavesh. All right. We're now at Daryavesh, Darius. Darius had received a letter from those who opposed the reconstruction of Yerushalayim and the establishment of a Jewish community. A number of people had sent him a letter, and now he is responding. It's in Aramaic, but hang in. Beidayin, chapter 6. Beidayin Daryavesh Malka, Sam Ta'ein. Then Daryavesh, the king, Sam Ta'ein, gave instructions. U'bakaru v'beit Sifraya, and they looked, they searched in the House of Archives. They were looking back at the original, the archives of Koresh, to find out what kind of permission had Cyrus the Great given to the Jews. And where did they look for it? Diginzaya Mahatin Tama Bibavel. They looked for the archives that were hidden back there in Babel. Vihishtakach. And you know, they found it. It wasn't in Babel. They had to find it in one of the other places where archives were held, in a place called Achmeta. Bibirta, that had been the capital of Madai Medinta, the state of Madai. Now, Paros and Madai originally started out as twin partners in the conquest of Babel. Koresh ultimately went, and Koresh was able to overcome Madai so that it became the Persian Empire exclusively. And they still had out there in Madai, some of the records had been moved there. They found Megillah Chada, one document, the Chen Ktiv Begavad Dichrona, and this is what was written Begava, the Chen Ktiv Begava. This was written in it, Dichrona, to be remembered for all time, what we would call Zichron Dvarim. What do you call Zichron Dvarim in... No, not memoir. before you make an agreement, in real estate, isn't there a zichron dvarim before you come to make the contract?
No, there's
a memo of intent?
Yeah, something like that.
An understanding. Yeah. Okay. Letter of intent.
Yeah.
Okay. Prenuptial. Anyway. And what they're telling us now is the text of the first permission that's granted. So here in the text itself, we are going back already and we are reviewing what happened at the beginning. In the first year of the reign of Korach. Now, it's interesting. It's not really the first year of his reign. And maybe I'll start giving you some dates now. Korach assumed the throne in 553 before the year 1. 553. That's when he assumed the throne of Persia. But ultimately, he began to count his reign later from the year 539. That's how many years? That's 14 years later. We're going down. 553 to 539. Why does he count his reign from 539, which is 15 years later? Because that was the year in which he conquered Babylon. He brought down the great Babylonian Empire, crushed it, destroyed it. So he saw this as the real beginning of his empire building. I mean, he'd been a king starting from 553, and then years of battle and struggle, and until finally he brings down Babylon. 539, the Shnat Chadol Korash, when it says in the letter the first year of Korash, it does not mean the first year of his reign, it means the first year that he considered the first year of his great kingdom, which is the beginning of the Persian Empire as Babylon comes tumbling down. The first year of Koresh, the king, Koresh Malka Somtang. Koresh, the king, has given instructions. Somtang. We've had the word, we've had this phrase a number of times. What were the instructions that were given by Koresh? Beit Elohim b'Yerushalayim, Beit Hayid b'nei, the house of God in Yerushalayim, his house should be built. What is that place? Atar. It's a place, the Dovchin Divchin. I told you that in Aramaic, there are words in Aramaic that simply use a different letter than Hebrew if you will replace the Dalet with a Zion. Dalet and Zion are interchangeable. What word do you have? The Zavchin Zivchin, the place at which sacrifices are brought. Zavchin Zivchin. So he says that house where sacrifices are brought, the Ushai, the Ushohi Misovlin, and the foundations are raised. He wants that this building should be built. And not only that, you know what he does? He specifies precisely how the Bet HaMikdash is to be built. Rumei Amin Shitin. Its height, 60 cubits tall. Precisely the measurements of the Bet HaMikdash of Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech. Rumei, height, from Ram, it rises to a height of Amin Shitin, 60 cubits. Pitoye. Pitoye means its width. Amin Shitin 60 Amot. Nidbachin di Eben Glol Talata. The walls are to be built a Nidbach. A Nidbach is a row. And now we see, but you know, by the you know, rows. Nidbachin di Eben Glol Tlat. Three rows of stone that the big stones that have to be rolled. The Nidbach di Chadat and a one level of wood, chadat. One is three of stone, one of wood. Three of stone, one of wood. V'nifketa min beit malka tikyehiv. Nifketa means the expenses. Do you know where the Who's going to pay for this? It's going to come from the house of the king. Koresh is the one who is going to pay for it. Foreign aid, you understand. Foreign aid from Koresh to the fledgling little community in Eretz Yisrael. Va'av money beit elohad di dahav ovikaspa, also money, the vessels of beit elohad, the house of God, di dahava. What do we do with a dalad? A dalad you turn into a zayin, zahava, gold, all right? Dafchin, difchin, zafchin, zifchin. I'm going to have you speaking Aramaic. By the way, I did have a childhood friend with whom I talked in Aramaic. Rabbi Teitz of Elizabeth. Yeah? There were times that we would do it, you know, that we learned here in Yeshiva together in 55, 56, so, you know, Israelis talk so loud on the bus. That was the last time I think I went on buses in this country. So we talked in Aramaic on the bus. People looked at us like two mishugoyim. They were trying to figure out what kind of language this is. Huh? Rabbi Alasaneya, that's right. Yeah, those are the good old days. Huh? Yes. There's a great deal of discussion amongst the historians, and I had made a comment, I believe, in the first year that we gave in Ezra, but it's worthwhile repeating it, especially since the wee hours of this morning, I saw even the historian Gretz brings this as a possibility, which confirms what it was that I had thought. You may recall that I read from you Sukkim in Yeshayahu, where Yeshayahu 150 to 200 years earlier had prophesied that there's going to be a king by the name of Koresh who's going to rebuild my house. Koresh took the prophecy of Yeshayahu seriously. Do you know why he took the prophecy of Yeshayahu seriously? Because he took all prophets seriously. And do you know why he took all prophets seriously? You read the few chapters, I think it's chapters 14, 15, 16 in Yeshayahu, where they describe the fall of Babylon. By the way, Yeshayahu describes the fall of Babylon before Babylon ever existed. Yirmiyahu already has a number of chapters, chapters 50, 51. The end of Yirmiyahu, he describes a Babylon that's going to be reduced to ashes. Do you know at what moment in time he says this? At a moment that Babylon is destroying Yerushalayim and turning Yerushalayim into ash. And the mighty superpower of the day is Babylon. And this fellow, I imagine to some people, it's a lot of babble, what Yirmiyahu is saying. This superpower is going to come crumbling down. Would you have said in the days of, I don't know, in the days of Kennedy or Nixon, when the great, when the policy of the United States was containment of the communists, the march of communism, if somebody would have written an article and they then say communism, what are you talking about? Communism in another 15 years is going to crumble like a deck of cards. It would look like a mishugada or a prophet. Yirmiyahu, while Babel is at the peak of its strength and its might, the whole world trembles from before Babylon. This Yirmiyahu is describing the fall of Babel. Koresh, when he in fact brings Babel down, is most probably, is caught over here in a bind. He knows that he has done it. He believes that he has done it. But listen, there was this fellow who, there was this fellow some 40, 50 years earlier, Yirmiyahu, who prophesied exactly what has happened. Let's say that Koresh has a healthy respect for Yeshayahu and Yirmiyahu. I'll answer that too. The question is, how did he know the prophecy? How did... First of all, Yirmiyahu was even respected by Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, who's the king of Babylon, who destroys the Beit HaMikdash, grants special permission for Yirmiyahu, you can stay, live wherever you want. Why, to begin with, you know why Nebuchadnezzar liked Yirmiyahu? Because Yirmiyahu is the one that prophesied that Nebuchadnezzar is going to destroy the Beit HaMikdash and send Jews into exile. So he has special privileges. But Yirmiyahu ultimately is not going to leave his people. When against his wishes they go down to Egypt, he goes down with them to Egypt and dies in Egypt. But they reluctantly, the people of the ancient world, have either they have a fascination with the prophets of Israel, or they are impressed with the prophets of Israel, because here is a man walking through the streets of Yerushalayim saying it's going to be destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, and it happens. And this same Yirmiyahu is the one who describes in vivid, graphic detail exactly what's going to happen to Babel, and it happens. And Koresh is the one who does it. I think I had described in that shir as well. Grandson of Nebuchadnezzar makes a party. Belshazzar makes a party. And at that party, he takes out the vessels of the Beit HaMikdash, and they're drinking from the vessels of the Beit HaMikdash. That's the famous night on which there's the handwriting on the wall in Daniel. Menei, menei, tekelu, farsim, you have been weighed and measured and found wanting. Why does he take out the vessels of the Beit HaMikdash? No, he takes them out. Because according to his calculation, the 70 years of the Babylonian exile of the Jews is over. And Yirmiyahu had prophesied that they're all going to go back and they're going to reestablish themselves, and it hasn't happened. So he feels that the threat of some kind of Jewish rebellion is over and done with. Ahasuerus, who comes later, 20 years, 18 years later, Ahasuerus, Bishnas Shalosh, the Malchusahu, in the third year of his reign, he makes a big party and he takes out Kelim, Mikelim, Shonim. What Kelim does he take out? What vessels? He takes the vessels of the Beit HaMikdash, because he has calculated that the 70 years are up. He says, Belshazzar made a mistake, but I figured it out. He made a mistake too. There was the fear of a Judea rising again from the ashes. They were frightened out of their wits of the establishment of a Jewish state. However, in the flush of victory, Koresh sees himself as the one whom the prophets, he's God's agent. By the way, he is therefore going to permit them only to build the Beit HaMikdash. They cannot build the walls of Yerushalayim. They can't even wall in the city. You know, he's going to make sure that all that will be there is some frimme yidalach over there who'll pour their hearts out by the kotel, and a few people that will bring sacrifices, and the sacrifices are going to be in honor of King Koresh. Oh, but he's very careful. He's not going to let this rabble create a new state over there. That's out. By the way, the same Koresh who grants permission, in a few years from now, he's going to rescind his permission. That's how much you can depend on the promises of, Goyim and their ilk. The only thing is, I want them to say Goyim. And what about the Yidden, the Jew across the street, you understand, Dennis Ross? What was it? Rabbi Schoenfeld last night listed all of the Jews who are involved in the Middle East, from Albright, the Yiddish Magel, and Dennis Ross, and then there's Martin Indyk, and there's Walker, six, seven, the whole kit and caboodle. The only guy over there is Clinton. And maybe we're going to have to find some significance to this as well. Koresh sees himself as the fulfillment of the prophecy. Yeshayahu had used the name Koresh. In the flush of victory where he sees before himself, all he had to do was take out a Yirmiyahu, and he would have seen a description exactly of what he had done. By the way, where is ancient Babel today? I think at around the turn of the century, about 100 years ago, they uncovered some of the ruins of Shushan HaBira, the city of Babel, the hanging gardens, everything literally covered with the sands of time. And that's exactly what Yirmiyahu said. So Koresh, therefore, in addition to the fact that Koresh was a pluralist, I think we made this point also in the first year, he was for freedom of religion. And every people in all of the lands in which he lived were free to worship their gods as they saw fit. Nebuchadnezzar, Babel was not like this. Babel was tyrannical and dictatorial. I would say Babel was communist-like. Communism wanted to uproot all religion from the Soviet Union, and the articles now say that religion is blossoming in the Soviet Union. There's certain things you can't destroy. It's always the mistake of all of the conquerors. They think they're going to destroy the human spirit. You can't do that. You can't. It doesn't happen. Koresh sees himself, therefore, as the fulfillment. Therefore, what he's ready to do for the Jewish people is, I'm going to go back to Yerushalayim and let them build their Beit HaMikdash. They cannot have an army. I don't think he even permits them to have an armed police force. You know, a strong armed police force, less armed, light weapons, niche light weapons. He does not permit a police force of any sort. He permits the building of a Beit HaMikdash. Great. That's it. Who? He gave. This is Daryavesh. Daryavesh. This is Yid. Daryavesh. This chapter. It said, first Pasuk involved Beit Dayan, then Daryavesh Malka, King Daryavesh, is giving instructions to find out what did Koresh say. Koresh's edict was in the year 539. Daryavesh, we're now at the year 520. That's 19 years later. The only Jews that have come during all of this time to Eretz Yisrael are Sheshbatzar, Zerubbabel, and Yehoshua Kohen Gadol. And we're talking with some, there may be 20,000, 30,000 Jews there yet. Ezra is not yet in. Ezra has not yet arrived. By the way, you'll find out that Ezra is not going to arrive for quite a while. Anyway, it's the first year of Koresh. In other words, this is a flashback, huh? 539. It's a flashback.
It's a flashback
now. Watch. You watch. This is a.
When the 20,000 came, they didn't bring the vessels with them.
They did.
Then how did they end up back again?
They're not back again. We're taking a flashback in history. We are now in the days of Darius. And Darius gives instructions. What permission was granted by my predecessor, Koresh? So they go looking for the original document of Koresh. And they find Koresh's document. And now we're getting the text of Koresh's document, which really, Sefer Ezra began with that, as Divrei Hayamim ended with that, the permission granted by Koresh. So now he's taking a look at what Koresh has permitted, and let's see what he's going to do. So he says, yes, it's true. In the first year of Koresh, he said, let the house of God be built in Yerushalayim, and sacrifices should be brought there. It should be 60 cubits tall. It should be 60 cubits wide. And three rows of stone, followed above with a row of wood. And who's going to pay for it? Koresh is going to pay for it. Pasuk Hey. Also the vessels of the house of God that are made of gold and silver, that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babel, had taken out from the temple Yerushalayim, and he had brought them to Babel. What should happen now is they should go back. V'yachach, and should be brought leheichalot to Yerushalayim la'atrei, to the temple in Yerushalayim, in their place. V'teichat beveit ha, and it should be brought to rest in the house of God. He's going to undo the ugliness of the house of Nebuchadnezzar. Everything is going back. He's not frightened of a Bet HaMikdash. Doesn't frighten him. On the contrary, here he is. He's the magnanimous great one. He must probably may even realize that ain't too many Jews that are going to go on Aliyah anyway. God, are you talking about that? Aliyah's the last thing he's worried about, and he was right. He had absolutely nothing to worry about. We also mentioned the mission in Sanhedrin that says who came with Ezra. By the way, Ezra hasn't come yet, I said. But in general, who came? The absolute, not only the poor, the dredgers of Jewish society, the criminals, the pimps, the drug pushers, that's what they were. Or worse, Mamzehi, Nesini, Haruri, Geiri, the Mishnah lists the 10 kinds of people who came, people of whose backgrounds were not known, people who we didn't know who the mother was, who the father was. It says it's a Mishnah, I'm saying a holy Mishnah in Kedushin, the fourth parak, Asoro, Yuchsin, Olu, Im Ezra, Im Bavel, Le'eretz Yisrael. There were 10 different kinds of Yichus. Now what they mean is non-Yichus. People who we didn't know their backgrounds, we didn't know anything about them. There may have been all sorts of problems in their families. Those are the guys that went with the foreign legionnaires. They're the ones that went. Nothing left to lose anymore. Or rabbis whose contracts were up, and they didn't want to go through the agony of negotiating it again. So you go off on Aliyah, and they make you a big party. Ka'an. Now we're 19 years ahead. In other words, this is what they found in the archives. Darius found this in the archives, that this had been an edict of Koresh 19 years earlier. Now he's going to add his own edict to this. Ka'an, now. Tatnai tachat avar nahara shtar boznai ukinavaton. If you want to remember who were the fellows that started this round of tzavas, and there have been people who have been sending all sorts of letters to the kings of Persia to try and stop Jews from settling in Eretz Yisrael and building in Eretz Yisrael. So now the king, Darius, is addressing these two fellas and their friends. Who are they? Tatnai, who is the governor of the other side of the river. Other side of the river is what? We've said it already a number of times. The other side of the Euphrates. In other words, that's the Near East, anything from Syria and down. So Tatnai was Pachat, he was the governor of Avar Nahara, the other side of the river, and Shtar Boznai, it's a name, Shtar Boznai, Ukinovaton and their friends, Afar Sechoya, the Persians, the Avar Nahara that are on the other side of the river. You hear, listen to the next few words, you know what Daryovish says to them? Rechikin havo min tama. Get yourselves away from there. Rachok. Get out of the way. Don't dare try to stop the Jews from doing what they're doing. Whatever they're doing with the permission of the kings of Persia. So you fellas, rechikin havo min tama. Get far away from there. Shivuku. Let it be. La'avidat beit alahod deich. The service of this Bet HaMikdash Deich is set. Let it be. Pachat Yehudoya, the governors of Judea, Ulesave Yehudoye, the elders of Judea, Beis Elohod Deich, this house of God gives known alatre should be built on its place. Do you know what we're learning from this now? What is quite obvious is that though 19 years earlier Koresh had given permission to build the Bet HaMikdash, and they had established the foundations, it was never finished. It was never finished. Because, they blocked them, and Koresh turned around a few years later, and he sent an order to stop the construction of the Bet HaMikdash. That's a very good question. It may very well be, first of all, that the order was not sent in writing. And I would suggest, do you know why it was not set in writing? Why? What's gone through my mind? No. When Esther prostrates herself before Ahasuerus and she says, listen, this is if the Haman is dead, but there's still an edict out there that on the 13th day of Adar, they should stand up and destroy the Jews. So he says, K'tav asher nechtav. Anything that is written and sealed with the signet ring of the king, there is no way to change it. So the best that I can do for you, Esther, is we'll send out new letters, but there's going to be a different letter giving Jews permission to defend themselves. So in other words, there are now two edicts that are in force. One, kill the Jews. Two, Jews, you may defend yourselves. But something that has been sealed and signed by the king can't be retracted. No such thing. What are you talking about? The edict of a king is sacrosanct. So therefore, I would not be a bit surprised that Koresh, when he changes his mind, sends his instructions verbally. And all he has to do for that little fledgling Jewish community that doesn't even have a wall around Jerusalem to protect themselves, they are really open to the forces of the devil around them. They have no choice. They have to stop. Now, Daryavesh is now permitting them to continue the construction of the Bet HaMikdash. Uminichse Malka. And that which belongs to the king, from the king's wealth. Now, you have to understand, when the king says that he's giving so much and so much money for the construction of the Bet HaMikdash, we have to know exactly where it's coming from. You know, you can't simply have a budget without knowing where the money is going to come from. You know how that works? He says it very clearly over here. Dimidas Avarnahara. This is going to come from the taxes of the other side of the river. In other words, the taxes that should otherwise be sent to the head office in Persia, from those taxes, money is going to be taken out. In other words, really, the taxation is being returned to the people. And you know, like, doesn't the federal government send a certain amount of money to the states? In other words, back for themselves. The midat avar nahara, the taxation of the other side of the river, osparna nifkisa teheva misyava, osparna is a word that we've also had a number of times, which is, I want you to do it quickly. Whatever I'm telling you has to be done quickly. And he says, nifkisa teheva misyava leguvre I leich di lo levatola. The expenses should be given leguvraya ileich. These people, the law of Atola, and not to stop them. When I saw the word Avarnahara, I had this feeling that he's letting them know, Ashtach, exactly. Your taxes are going to go to build the Bet HaMikdash that you wanted to stop. Now, if you're going to ask me, why Daryavesh is so good to the Jews, I'm not certain. Because we don't have enough information about Daryavesh to know why. Because...
is that related to Esther?
No, he's coming. Artaxasta, the next one that we're going to come to, is going to be the son of Esther. By the way, Ahasuerus is going to be bad news all the way. Ahasuerus is not going to permit any kind of construction. He doesn't want to. Don't talk to me about Yerushalayim. We quoted that from the Megillah. Twice he says to Esther, what is it that you want, Esther? Ad chatzi hamalchut, up until half the kingdom I give you, says Rashi, it's the Gemara that says, Ad, I will give you up until that which chatzi divides my kingdom in half. Yerushalayim, no money for Yerushalayim, no construction in Yerushalayim. He's frightened. Ahasuerus is frightened of a Judea that might rise again. He's frightened. I mean, if some of you remember a shiur that I said some years ago on Megillat Esther, and certainly the two places in the Megillah where he says this to Esther, don't talk to me about Yerushalayim, it's because Ahasuerus has become a terrified human being. Ahasuerus is frightened. When does he become a fright? First of all, he has good reason to be frightened. He has reason to be frightened because he was a commoner who had risen to power. There are two ways that commoners rise to power. One is over a million dead bodies. Ahasuerus was a killer, and Ahasuerus was simply over millions of dead bodies. I mean, this is an early incarnation of a Pol Pot or anybody else you want, a Stalin. Yeah, great. He has risen to power over the many dead bodies. So therefore, that already gives him reason to be frightened, you know. Those who live by the sword, die by the sword. He has a lot of enemies. But worse than that, the two people closest to him have attempted to assassinate him. And the assassination is thwarted at the last moment by a Shabak agent, Mordechai, who tells him he's heard them talk about it in their code language, which he understands. It's from that moment on and further that Ahasuerus meteorically raises to power Haman, because Haman is going to be his outside man. He develops a bunker mentality. He's frightened of going out. Isn't it strange that Esther says to Mordechai, you can't come to the king uninvited. Anybody who comes to the king uninvited is going to be put to death immediately. There are people standing outside the throne room, and they will kill anybody except for the rare case where the king may extend his golden scepter. Why is he so surrounded by guards? Because he's frightened out of his wits. He knows he has enemies. There's even been an attempt in the palace. In the palace there's been an attempt on his life. Do you know what that means? This man is frightened. He wants nothing. Nothing that may in any way change the balance of power in his state. Yerushalayim, forget about it. Come back to me in 100 years. Because he is a frightened and a terrified individual. He lives with a bunker mentality in the...
What he married
royalty. He married royalty and then he killed the royalty. You know why he killed the royalty that he married? Because the royalty that he married was becoming too uppity for him. She was leaving the impression that he is king by virtue of the fact that he married well. And he's telling her, do you know why I'm king? Because I conquered the world. There was a struggle of wills between the two. That's why he had to get rid of her. She stood in his way. All right? Malbim says that. It's not just gold, you know, it's not the op-ed page of the... of the Jerusalem Post. I mean, this is
it's pure
da'af. Yeah. Malbim says that he was frightened of her. Ahasuerus is really a pitiful, pitiful soul. He has no self confidence. He's lost all of his self confidence. Therefore, he cannot take any chances. He doesn't want to hear anything about Jerusalem. Daryavesh, let's see, what more? Umar Choshchan, come on, I gotta finish this chapter. Umar Choshchan, Umar, and whatever is needed not only is he going to give money for the construction of the Beit HaMikdash, and he has outlined how, he has repeated the outline of how it is to be built. He says, whatever they need. Ubnei Torin, oxen, Tor. Come on, you know where you know Aramaic from. Chag Gadya. Or are you all asleep when it comes to Chag Gadya? V'osa shachat, the shachat comes, the shachat litura. He shechts the oxen, Torin. Dichnin, are lambs. Imrin, shepsalach. La'alavan, to be brought as Ola. La'alahoshmaya, to the God of heaven. Chintin is chitim. That's wheat. Malach, you know what malach is, salt. Chamar is wine. Chamar is wine. We even use it in halach, it's used. I mean, the word chamar, chamra, where do we use it?
Chamra is a soil.
Huh?
Chamra is a soil.
Is a soil?
Chamar.
Chamar. All right, I was thinking of something. Okay, let's go. Oh, mishach. Mishach is oil. What do you use oil for? To anoint. Kemeimar kohanaya de Yerushalayim, as will be stated by the priests in Yerushalayim, lehev misyayet lahom, should be given to them yom biyom, day by day, dilo sholo. And don't forget, don't be negligent about it. You have to, this is all that he's saying. So that they should bring incense before the God of heaven. And they should pray for the life of the king and his children. Listen, if you can have, right, if you can have 100 different deities praying for you, it's ken ishat. You understand? He has absolutely nothing to lose. Umini sim te'ein. And from me, instructions are given. Dikol enosh. Listen to this. This is really fascinating. Any person, diyahashne, who will change, shinui, who will change, pidgom adeno, this order, yitnesach o min baite. What's o? Didn't you have the word o before? Aleph ayin. Three rows of stone and one row of wood. Oh, is wood. H. So you know what he says? You know what's going to happen to anybody who defines this order? Yidnesach omin baite, a timber will, piece of wood will be torn out of his house. Uzekif yidmechei alohi, and he's going to be strung up on it. Now either he's going to be hung on it, or he may very well be, you know, maybe crucified on it. He'll be hung on it. Ubaitein nevolu, and his house will be destroyed. Yit abed al ubaitein nevolu yit abed al dano, and his house will be destroyed because he did this. Huh? Yes. Destroying houses. That's right. Okay. Masha, you're not getting too liberal with me now. Good. The Elohadi Shakin Shimei Tama, and the God whose name rests there, Lishakin Shmo Sham, Shin and Taf are also interchangeable. Yemagar, called, what is the word Yemagar come from? Where is the word Yemagar? Huh? It's one of the words that most probably appears here, and it appears in davening. V'lamalshinim alti sikva v'chol hazedim mehera ta'aker t'shabe t'mager. Nobody knows what t'mager means, except that when you take a look at its neighbors, you know it's not too good. Yeah. Here you have yemagar. Yemagar means will be totally, I don't know, t'shmedert or t'destroyed. Yemagar kol melech va'am, any nation or people, to yishlach yadei, who will stretch out his hand, lahashnoya, to change this, lechabola beit alahadech, or to destroy or harm this house of God, di Yerushalayim, that is in Yerushalayim. Anod Dor Yodesh Sameh to aim, I Dor Yodesh have given this order, or Sparno Yitabeh, speedily it shall be done. This is, I would say that this is quite a, I'm sure that, wait to see what will happen when this message is going to arrive in Yerushalayim. This is probably one of the great documents, I'm sure, the Jews, like, or the partition plan, I'm sure the Jews were dancing in the streets of, Yerushalayim. They die in them. Tapnei Pachat Avarnahara, Shtar Bosni, Yekunavachom. Tapnei Pach, the governor of the other side of the river, and Shtar Bosni and his friends, Lekobel, they received the Shalach, the Yavesh, the Sada Yehudoya, Wanayin Umatzachin, and the elders of Judea, they built and they succeeded. B'nevuas Chagai Nevi'a, Uzechaya Bar Ido. You see, I have a feeling that over here, it's not so much Daryavesh. It's not so much Darius. But this is in response to the two prophets, Haggai and Zechariah, who've come to the Jewish people and told them, why are you tarrying? Why aren't you building the Beit HaMikdash? It had been during the long period of time, the pause, the hiatus, between the beginning of the construction, and there it is, you know, everything is lying there on Har HaBayit, and it's all falling into rubble and ruins. I think what Klal Yisrael needed, as we need every so often, a shot in the arm. And you know what the shot in the arm is? Here the prophets come and tell them, two prophets come and tell them, fellas, you have to build the Beit HaMikdash. More than that, you'll see in Haggai that Haggai says the reason why the economy of Eretz Yisrael is so terrible is because you're not building the Beit HaMikdash as you should. Go up to the mountains, cut down wood, bring the wood, and build the Beit HaMikdash. And then if in the wake of the prophecies of Haggai and Zechariah they get a message like this, I mean, this is a message that is so unusual, unusual in terms of how harsh and how sharp and how definite it is. What's going to happen to anybody who dares change anything over here? And he wants it done in haste, quickly, immediately. There's no question about it that the Jew walking in the streets was probably turned to Haggai and Zechariah and said, God Almighty. As a Jew said in Israel once, Yesh Elokim. After the election. Yossi Sarid, when he thought that that Labor and Meretz had won, yes, yes, you look at. So when they found out in the morning that they didn't win, he didn't say it again. All right. But I think it's terribly important that in the wake of the prophecies of Haggai and Zechariah, terribly important. I mean, don't we get I'm sure that all of us, you'll read any one of the Pesukim in Tanakh that talks about Kibbutz Golios, and you feel, me, I'm the Kibbutz Golios. I'm it. I mean, it's unbelievable to know that you are part of the fulfillment, you're living the fulfillment of a prophecy. And here it comes so quickly after Haggai and Zechariah had told them to do it. And it goes on to say, Uveno, they built the Shachlilu, and they completed Mintam Elohai Yisrael, they did it according to the mitzvah. Remember, Tam is a command. The mitzvah of the God of Israel. Umitam Kodesh v'dor yodesh v'artachshasta melech baras. You know what's beautiful about this pasuk? This pasuk is one of the pasukim that you have to remember, because in this pasuk, do you know we have the three major edicts in order? You'll always refer back to this pasuk, but we're going to have to give you the dates. There's a period of time between one and the next. Koresh was the first. 19 years later is Daryavesh, yeah. 539, 520. Artashasta is going to be the son of Esther. And that's going to be some years later, precisely. It could be some 50, 60 years later, but we'll try and get the exact dating for it. It's going to be in the time of Ezra and then later Nehemiah, But these are the three kings. Each one added something to the original edict. Let's go further. V'sheitzei baita dinah, and this house was completed at Yom Klota liyirach Adar by the third day of the month of Adar. Dehi shnat sheit, in the sixth year, lemalchut Daryovesh malko, to the kingdom of King Daryovesh. Finished. It took something like 4.5 years to. Va'abadu b'nei Yisrael, the Kohanaya, Uleviyaya, Ushar b'nei Galuta, and the children of Israel, the Kohanim and the Levim, and the rest of the people that come from the exile, they made Chanukah Beit Olahad, the law, the dedication of this house of God, v'chedva, with joy. When they brought sacrifices for the dedication of this Beit HaMikdash, Todin, Ma'or, Tor, we already learned, oxen, 100 different rams, Matayin, 200, Imrin, Shefsalach, sheep, Arba Ma'or, 400, Utsifide, Ezen, and goats, Lechatoya, Alkol, Yisrael, Trey, also 12 goats for a sin offering were brought, representing the tribes of Israel. Leminyan Shiftei Yisrael, according to the number of the tribes of Israel. I don't know whether I have the right to read a little more into this than meets the eye. How many tribes have come back to two? Twelve. It's the hope. The hope, because they believe that they are building a Beit HaMikdash for everyone. There is also, I believe, a historic opinion that says that there were a trickle of representatives of various tribes that made their way back for the second Beit HaMikdash. There may have been representatives there. But more than that, it raises another issue. Rabbi Akiva says that the 10 tribes are never going to return. The Tanoim disagree with Rabbi Akiva. Here it would seem to be that there will be... it may mean that en masse they will not come back because there isn't going to be much left of them, but representatives of the 12 tribes there will be. V'hakinu Kohanayot Biflugoton Vilevaya Vilevoye Bimachlokoton Alavida Vilahodi Bimishlan Kichtav Sefar Moshe. And they established, how do we say it in davening? Kohanim Biduchonam Ulevim Vishiram Ubizimram Vishoel Bimamodam. They reestablished again the Kohanim Biflugoton according to their groups. Vilevoyoya Bimachlokoton, and the divisions of the Levim are on the service of God in Yerushalayim, as is written in the Sefer of Moshe. Remember, they had finished the Beit HaMikdash. Huh? How many people? I don't know. By now, there may be 40,000 people. Oh, the majority of Jews in the world.
Did you say that they had to have a majority established?
No, no, no. You need a majority of Jews in the world for Shemitah and Yovel. To establish all this, you don't need no requirement. Only where it says Ki Tavo'u El Haaretz in the parash of Shemitah and Yovel, you need the majority of Jews in the world living in Eretz Yisrael. To begin, that Shemitah is going to be Min HaTorah. Shemitah is the Rabbanan. Not only that, there are opinions that say, the Raven and others say that Shemitah is no more than Midas Hasidus, an act of piety in our time. Why do you think there's a Het HaMechira? Because we Zionist rabbis are like a bunch of, weak, lily-livered, no. Because we're not dealing with the Din Min HaTorah, we're dealing with the Din Min HaRabbanan. What of that? You can make a Het HaRiska for ribbis, for interest, that's Min HaTorah, that's okay, right? Okay? You can sell chametz which is an Issa ben HaTorah bal Yeroi bal Yematzeh, and that's okay. You run in for the rabbi, you take a rolled up $1 bill that has seen better days and put it in his hand, and you sell your cards.
Otherwise, you have to spill it over the liquor.
That's right. Yeah. But everybody gets themselves all crazy when it comes to Shemitah, which is Midrabanan. Now we're near the category of Chametz or Ribbis. All right. Why do I get so excited about that? I have to get so excited about something. All right. Yeah. Yes, because on the third day of Adar, they had finished the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. When is it going to be used now by all of Israel? Pesach. Vayasu b'nei ha'golet ha'pesach, the people of the exile made Pesach. Ba'abosu l'chodesh ha'rishon, on the first day, the 14th day of the first month. Ki hitaharu ha'kohanim v'alevim ke'echon kulam tahorim, because the Kohanim and Levim had purified themselves. They were all tahor. Vayishchutu ha'pesach l'kol b'nei ha'golet, they slaughtered the Korban Pesach for all of the people of the Gola. V'lacheim ha'kohanim v'lehem, for their brothers the Kohanim, and for themselves, v'yoychlu b'nei Yisrael ha'shavim e'ar gola, b'nei Yisrael who returned from the gola, ate, v'chol ha'nivdal mitumad goyei ha'aretz aleihem, and anybody who had separated himself. This is such an important few words.
It's interesting that all of a sudden it goes back to Hebrew.
Because there's a reason. Only the texts of the edicts that were written in Aramaic are brought here in their original, so that one make no mistake. Now, I'll tell you in a moment what's so important over here. V'chol ha'nivdal mitumad goyei ha'aretz aleihem lidrosh la'ashem l'kei Yisrael. He did not permit those who had worshipped idols and were living in Eretz Yisrael, they did not permit them to be partners with them in the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. But once the Beit HaMikdash was built, and somebody said that he swears off idolatry and pagan and heathen practices, they made the Korban Pesach for them. Am Echad. Am Echad, Kiyur Echad. All right, now, it's more. I'm not going to give you the whole essay. There's a magnificent essay by the Meshech Chochma, and I've said it once in a shiur some years ago. Meshech Chochma says you will find in Tanakh a number of places where history, the Tanakh, records that the Korban Pesach was brought. In Parsha Balotcha, second year in the desert, when Jews crossed into Eretz Yisrael, there was a mass mila of Klal Yisrael, and it says at the beginning of Yeshua, they made Korban Pesach. In the days of Chizkiyahu, king of Yehuda, they made Korban Pesach. And now, well, there was another one in the days of Yoshiyahu, the king, and now there's the one in the days of Ezra and the Nehemiah. The Meshech Chochma, I'm telling you a major essay in one line. Osparno, I'm going to tell it to you. You'll see, I can get you talking. Mini sim te'en, di kuchen hakshivu. All right. Yeah, the Bnei Hagala. The Meshech Chochma says the Korban Pesach served as the antidote to idolatry. Because what was the first Korban Pesach? A rejection of the idolatry of Egypt. We're going to slaughter the idol of Egypt in their presence. The slaughtering of the Korban Pesach represented the shattering of the idols. Therefore he says, after every period in Jewish history when there was idolatry, they celebrated a Korban Pesach afterwards with great pomp and circumstance. In the second year that they were in the desert, it was after the sin of the Egel. To cleanse and purify themselves from the sin of the Egel, they brought a Korban Pesach, and after that, no Korban Pesach was brought the next 39 years in the desert. They didn't bring one. The next one that's brought in the days of Yeshua, just a few short days after they crossed the Jordan. They crossed the Jordan on the 10th of Nisan. They are circumcised, and by the 14th, they already bring the Karban Pesach. So he says that was the antidote to what happened at the end of Pasha's Balak, when they served, Jews served Baal Peor. In the days of Chizkiyahu purified the people and separated them from idolatry, and then he brought a big Karban Pesach. The same thing was done in the days of Yoshiyahu. And I think the proof of it is this pasuk in Ezra. Take a look at what the pasuk says. V'chol hanivdol mitumat goyei haaretz aleihem. Anybody who had separated himself from the abomination, the tumah of goyei haaretz, anybody who had said no more avodah zarah was part of that Korban Pesach. Because now they turned lidrosh l'Hashem elokei Yisrael, to seek out the God of Israel. Yes?
Does this mean that there was no Korban Pesach in between?
No. The only one place did I say that there was a pause, and that was in the Midbar. They made a Korban Pesach every year.
These
were the ones that were mentioned because they were made with great joy. Take a look. The next pasuk can say, Vayasu chag matzot shivat yomim b'simcha. Kisimchom Hashem, because God had given them great joy. But no, the only place where they didn't do it was in the desert, and there the pasuk in Yeshua says because they couldn't do it because they didn't circumcise their children, so they weren't able to do it. Wait, Kisimchom Hashem in lepas. Take a look at how a Jew is supposed to see, in what light he's supposed to see current events. What is their great joy? Kisimchom Hashem, because God gave them great joy. How? Vehesev lev melech Asher aleihem. He turned the heart of the king of Asher toward them. They don't believe that Daryavish Darius has become a Jew lover. They see it, as I said before. They see it, that this is it. Chagai and Zechariah told us that it will happen. And now it happened. How did it happen? So I'm sure that economists or sociologists or psychologists or military experts will say that, Darius wanted to make certain that he would begin to cement his relationships with the Jews in the event that there's any kind of struggle. You know, everybody, you can explain everything in all sorts of ways that there were economic and social and other reasons for it. But when it comes down to the bottom line, Klal Yisrael saw it clearly. To strengthen the hand, the house of God, the God of Israel. The next three chapters are going to be the third permission that is granted. This is going to be our Tachshasta. Then we're going to get all of our dates straight. And then we're going to have Ezra himself finally coming. Ezra is going to be coming about between 80 to 90 years after the first Olim came. And even after the first waves of Aliyah, there's still things that can be accomplished by the Olim who come later. Yes. I took a little, yes? That's your kind of question. And you know what I'm going to do with your kind of question? No, I'm not going to go look at it. Because the word chedva is going to appear in a major pasuk in Nehemiah. Can you wait? Go. Yeah. Vito, Gila, Rina, the Chedva. Every one of them has a... Sarah just reminded me, today is the yard site of Ezra. It's the yard site. Tomorrow is the fast day. Tomorrow is Asura B'Tavis. They say that Chet and Tet are also sad days. Chet, I think, is the day on which they translated the Torah into Greek, and Tet was the death of Ezra. Sarah, I'm so happy you reminded me. Very good. Okay.